Hi, I'm Sharad Kutan, and welcome to Let's Talk, the show that brings you the most important conversations of the day. Today, we're talking about the economy because the Ministry of Finance had a major conference today called The New Dawn, and Khazana Mega Trends has been going for the last 2 days. So, a lot of talk. It's been a gab fest in Kuala Lumpur about the economy. But does the government have all the answers? We, of course, feel the economy. We feel it in the cost of living, in stagnant wages, in unaffordable housing. Is that a problem that can be solved easily? It is the modern economy, something that baffles me. And to help me kind of unpack these really difficult questions, I have today on my show Aira Azhari. She is with the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs. And also joining me, Ibrahim Sani, because a familiar face on Astro One. He's my colleague. Thank you so much, both of you, for joining me tonight.
Thank you for having us. Yeah, that's great.
Okay, well, let's begin with the Ministry of Finance conference, A New Dawn. Ibrahim, you've been shuttling back and forth between that and the Khazana Megatrends, but let's focus on that. Aira, you've been listening to those speeches, the two principal speeches, the Dr. Mahathir as well as Anwar Ibrahim. Tell us, what are your main takeaways from what they said?
Yeah, so I think based on the three speeches, actually, Tun Mahathir, Datuk Sri Anwar Ibrahim and Lim Guan Eng, I think all three of them had an overall outlook of how private sector should lead the economy, should lead growth in the economy. And I think this is quite positive, especially I think in Malaysia, you know, we've had such a heavy presence of GLCs in the economy, and I'm sure you know that IDEAS has also made some publications on the issue of GLC. So I think this was the main takeaway for me. All three speeches touched on the need for private sector-led growth, and I think a big part of Tun Mahathir's speech was also on the issue of debt, and you know, how the government is actually really pressed for money at the moment. And I think that's also interesting because we can then see how this, you know, the government can start rationalizing spending.
Did you see something that surprised you at all today?
Actually, the way it was done was very interesting for me, because every year we know that Khazana Megatrends Forum, or KMF 2018, is always going to happen around this time. The fact that the MOF decided to do this so-called inaugural investor conference at the same time it overlaps KMF 18 is something that we have to note. I don't know whether this was choreographed or poor planning, or it was something that was intended to do so, but whatever it is, it happened at the same time, and a lot of talk and chatter has been happening over the country, particularly on this country. Now, you touched on two things, right? Yeah. We got to talk about the debt. We got to talk about the way we got to entice the private sector. These are the two things. Tun Doctor said he will be very friendly, or Malaysia will be very friendly towards the private sector. Yeah. And on the tax part, Joseph Stiglitz said that there are many good kinds of taxes. Mm-hmm. And he said there's inheritance tax, capital tax, capital gains tax, property tax, carbon tax. All this is going to be discussed. And I think we should go in depth into all these kind of conversations.
Well, before we get into the specifics, the question, I think, remains that we come back to the issue of the timing of both these conferences, especially the MOF conference, because that's the new kid on the block, as it were. Did you see, in terms of the audience, was one more well attended than the other?
Oh yeah, no. I mean, I think both are targeting different kinds of people. I don't know, because I've been, as you say, I've been shuttling back and forth. I sort of knew that New Dawn was going to get a lot of people, but in the press release, it says 1,200 institutional investors from 10 countries. I didn't expect that much people. Yeah, so from New Dawn. But for the KMF, it was meant to be in-house. Three of our colleagues attended. Two of them are Wolfson Peterson scholars. So a lot of it is closed door. A lot of it can't be reported. But generally speaking, it is well attended on both sides, and it hit the desired audiences on the organizing part. So I guess it does get that kind of traction from both parties.
Well, Aira, so let's go back to, the need for a lot of us, just ordinary citizens, as well as people who are watching government policy and trying to understand where this new government is going. Yeah. Was there enough real substance? Because talking about being business friendly, now that's been the mantra of or yeah. the Barisan National
Since
Government.
The NEM.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, being business friendly is not something unusual to now assert. Mm-hmm. So what stood out for you in terms of concrete shifts in policy? Are we actually going to see policy continuity, broadly speaking?
Mm. That's interesting because, as you rightly said, being business friendly is not new to the government. During the Najib administration, the new economic model really was, you know, there was so much emphasis on, you know, market economy and market-led growth. But I think it's interesting that, you know, the Prime Minister, the Finance Minister and the leader of the biggest party in the current government, all three of them emphasised this in their speech. In terms of substance, I think, all three speeches had a broad kind of vision of where we want to go, but I think it did obviously lack details and substance. But I don't think these speeches are meant to have those things anyway. You know, it's kind of like this is what we think the new dawn of Malaysia should look like. And, you know, but of course, as civil society, you know, as the media, it is important for us to then follow up and say, you know, so what are you actually going to do and what are the concrete steps that you're going to take?
Right. Yeah. Ibrahim, since you were on the ground, you spoke to people. What was their response? Were they happy with the general statements?
They find the keynote speeches to be vanilla. In other words, it's very rhetoric driven and not much clarity. But from the conversation that I've had on the ground, both at KMF and the New Dawn, is that the track sessions are very interesting. We've got to remember the track sessions, particularly for the New Dawn, is hosted by a host of ministers. We got Baru Bian, the Minister of Works. We got Minister of Housing, Zuraida. We got Minister of Energy and Technology, Yeo Bee Yin. Gobind Singh was there. Our Minister for MCMC, and they did lay out a lot of plans, particularly their wish list that they want to see for their budget for their ministry. And when we all know the budget's very soon, it's like 3-4 weeks away, and that is where we saw a lot of clarity in terms of the policies that they want to roll out. But again, it's very I should say siloed, because, you know, Baru Bian, when he talks about the Ministry of Works, it's very much, oh, this is where I need it, the JKR and many others. You'll be in when with the new agencies that is being absorbed under the new Ministry of Technology and so on. But I don't see the cohesiveness in terms of intra-ministerial work. And that's where, you know, maybe we can hope for the better for the government.
Right, Ira, I see you nodding. And why is it? What exactly is it that Ibrahim is saying that, you know, really, you know, strikes a chord?
Yeah, I think this intra-ministry synergy, I think, has always been something that's lacking in our governance. Based on, you know, from my own work, and, you know, we go meet different ministries, and, you know, when we tell them something, they're like, oh no, that's the other ministry's job, right? And, you know, just to get that synergy between ministries, I think, you know, we really haven't gotten there yet. And I think it's interesting when Ibrahim said that, you know, when, you know, some of these sessions really had some concrete proposals, but then, you know, a lot of these things require inter and intra-ministry cooperation and I think, you know, that
I give
this
you
has
two examples,
been,
yeah. right? Two examples. One of them is women, another one is Mara. And I think, of course, now Mara is housed under the Rural Development Minister and Ministry. But it cuts across a lot of sections, right? Including anywhere from investments, where the Minister of Economic Affairs, Azmin Ali, is supposed to take care of. It cuts across many other sections, like vocational training, when Ruiza is being charged or being tasked to look at. And that's one intra-ministerial opportunity that the government can actually expound on. Another area is on women. When we talk about glass ceiling, you know, why women is earning lesser than men, how to get women back to the workforce after they have started their family, you know, all this impacts a lot of departments and a lot of agencies.
Okay, so it brings us to the question of governance, really, Ira. And, you know, even before these really good plans are laid out, or these visions are articulated, does government itself need to be reorganized? We know there's the issue of corruption, and that's something that the Prime Minister has well telegraphed in his messages, that he'll need to deal with corrupt individuals.
Yes.
But what about the form of cabinet, or the kinds of ways in which governance is passed out? I mean, is that something that you think that the current administration has actually come to grips with?
Yeah, I think in terms of governance, one thing that probably we kind of haven't spoken as much as about, but Tun actually brought this up in his speech, which is civil servants, right? So the civil service, it's so important that civil service kind of moves, you know, as fast as they can to sort of catch up with this Malaysia Baru. And, you know, it remains to be seen whether our civil service has done this fast enough. And I think that's really a big part of governance, because at the end of the day, the civil servants are the one that's carrying out the policies and, you know, really going down on the ground and just meeting people, you know, ministers and, you know, the KSUs and all that. You know, they churn out policies. But it's really the civil service. And I think that that's a key area, I think, that is really important to really push
forward.
Right.
You know, I mean, among some sectors of the Malaysian public, the civil service has a bad name. It's seen as bloated, it's seen as inefficient, it's seen as that sector, you know, that has not drawn the best talent to itself, you know, partly because of its hiring practices and such. Yem, do you think that our ideas about turning the civil service around are delusional? I mean, can we do it in time for the kind of plans that this government has?
No, we've got to draw a line here, because when you talk about civil service, we're talking about 1.7 million Malaysians, right? And if you go to UTC, you can get everything done there, and pronto. You can get a passport done with, you know, road tax, change on the grant on the JPJ. Everything can be done there, you know, your new IC.
So it's exemplary in terms of efficiency.
This is exemplary. This is as exemplary as it gets. Then you go to other departments, right? When you go to immigration and you want to have foreign policy hiring and the rehiring program, for instance, it takes months upon months. Then you try to understand what's going on. Is it because of lack of resources or too much resources where people become complacent? So yes, I think the problem with giving a blanket statement like, you know, the civil service needs revamp, I think we've got to be a little bit more, you know, nuanced about that, right? Because there are key areas where we got to give credit where credit is due, but there are areas where a lot of civil service is lacking. The education ministry is one of them. You know why? Because the teachers are being overburdened by administrative work. And again and again, we've seen so many groups of teachers have said that they have to have a lot of time teaching instead of doing administrative work. We've seen the Minister of Education, Mazli Malik, saying that, oh, you know, we're going to make sure that the admin part is being taken care of. But there are operational questions. Number one, where is he going to get that admin people? Number two, we've had a lot of statements coming in from other ministers that they are overbloated in their civil service. So are you going to absorb under the Minister of Education? Those are the kind of questions that we want to see. And those are the kind of details that is lacking in both KMF and New Dawn. These operational questions that we're looking for.
Okay. We'll come back. Hold your thoughts. We're going to come back with a deeper look at the state as an engine of growth and also, of course, in its role as a leading governance institution in the country and how it can take us to a new future. Stay tuned. This is Let's Talk. Welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutan. With me in the studio, Ibrahim Sani, of course, a familiar face on Astro Wani, and our special guest, Aira Azhari. She's with the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs. And we're talking about the civil service, the transformation there necessary to drive the economic visions of the present government. Think of politicians as the drivers and the civil service as the car, as it were. Aira, this car, everybody says, is 60 years old. It perhaps needs an overhaul. How long does it need to be in the workshop before it be taken back on the road and driven at top speed?
Oh, we need electric cars by now.
Sorry, I know the metaphor. Yeah. I'm stretching the metaphor
out
a bit.
You are talking about the civil service.
I am talking about the civil service, right? So,
because the car is another issue.
Okay.
Oh, my God. Yeah, the third car thing.
Let's we come to the third car vision or idea or proposal, if you like, of Tun Dr. Mahathir. But let's talk about the civil service for a while. This government, you know, has inherited practices, and I believe, you know, Anwar Ibrahim today in his address also talked about how when he remembers how certain institutions were set up, and the first thing that people did when they were given a task to maybe, you know, alleviate rural poverty was they built a huge building in Kuala Lumpur. He says those excesses have to stop. But are we just talking about those kinds of acts? Is there a huge range? Is there a thinking Is there policy formulation capacity in our civil service that needs to be built before, in fact, we move forward?
Yeah, I mean, wow, that's a difficult question. I mean, you know, the thing with our civil service is there's several things to unpack, right? So firstly, our constitution includes like teachers and doctors and military into and categorize them as, you know, into civil service. So then that creates the, you know, this bloated huge number of people in the civil service, and then that also has impacts on the government budget. So,
but aren't they civil servants? I mean, aren't they paid by the public purse?
Well, I think in different countries there are different models, you know. So I think in some countries teachers are paid like according to the state, so the state education departments allocate a budget and then, you know, they pay teachers using that budget. So I think there are several models in different countries that, I don't know, perhaps we should look at. But what I wanted to, that question then leads to just the budget, right? So our operating expenditure in our budget is so, it's huge. And a lot of that is like government pensions and, you know, just paying government salaries. And that becomes a problem because then, you know, we are in this financial situation, right?
Right. Yeah. So you're trying to make distinction between the operational side and the development, you know, dimension budget, yes, of the budget, right? And that's something, yeah, that we talk about all the time.
We do. In fact, imagine this, right? The New Dawn Conference, while it is being, you know, earmarked by, as a MOF event, it was co-organized by the triumvirate of the three banks in Malaysia, Maybank, yeah, CIMB and RHB. Just last week, we interviewed the chief economists of the three banks. We got Dr. Don Hanna from CIMB, we got Vincent Liu from RHB, and we got Suhaimin Ilyas, a very renowned name actually in the local economic scene. All three of them are saying a few things. Number one, the idea of reducing or keeping that fiscal deficit of minus 2.8% in the GDP is top of mind for both the Minister of Finance, Lim Guan Eng, as well as people watching this, including the chief economists that I spoke of. So can Guan Eng achieve that negative 2.8% fiscal deficit, right? Or 2.8% fiscal deficit? The only answer to this is to look at the cost of the 1.7 million civil servants and try to see if there are details into how to manage this cost accordingly in the next decade to come. Imagine this, KUAP, the body that handles pension, is already saying that there's going to be billions upon billions of monthly payment of pensions in the years to come, and that is a worrisome figure to deal with.
Right, so that's a commitment the government can't back away from. They can't, I mean, these people have, you know, served the government, served the public, and they, you know, deserve their pensions. The question is moving forward, right, and how, you know, especially the thinking, and Ira, you know, if you could help me understand, is it true that the commonplace understanding that the state was a way of used its you know, resources to facilitate social mobility? That without the state feeling, you know, unless it steps away from that idea that it needs to facilitate social mobility, won't the state always be bloated?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, this really comes to the question of fundamentals, right? I mean, what role does the state really play? And, you know, in terms of social mobility, I mean, okay, I mean, all nation states, all countries will need to have a civil service, right? But then, you know, then the state has to think, like, you know, how sustainable is it to maintain a 1.7 million people civil service? And that, I mean, the answers are not easy because it's also very
It's a deeply
costly,
political,
right?
issue. I mean, after all, you know, there was an old kind of way of thinking about government. Secure a job in government, it's your iron rice bowl.
Yeah, but I don't think the new generation is thinking that way.
Yeah.
In fact, the new generation is embracing entrepreneurship in great numbers. And I think a lot of this, so that's why I always keep saying that if the previous focus under Najib's administration was, you know, keeping all eyes on MOF and the various agencies under it, I think the new thinking has to be under Yeo Byin and all the agencies under her, including MDEC, including CRADL, including MDV, Malaysian Debt Ventures. All this inculcates entrepreneurship, and all this will definitely flow out the grants. Remember, just earlier today.
But Ira, you know, look, we can talk about the most dynamic sector of the millennials, of the younger, the new next generation, who are excited about this. They're excited about globalization. They're excited about, you know, making on their own.
Yeah, sharing economy.
But, and we see this in many countries, France and the, you know, the advanced European countries, where there's a pushback from people who are afraid of globalization, who don't want to be entrepreneurs, who want the iron rice bowl. I mean, could we face a backlash if we, if this government pushes too hard on this idea that government has no role in social mobility or providing for people?
No, I think what the government has an important role, you know, which is actually providing this environment where people can be socially mobile. And how do you do that? It's, you know, it's providing an environment that's competitive, where, you know, people from every stage of the economic ladder, whether you're in the B40 or the you can have opportunities in the economy. And I think, and this is why this this new economy, this sharing economy, this Grab kind of Uber kind of model, I think, is very interesting, because, you know, that gives so many people different kinds of opportunities. And, you know, I mean, when I go and Grab, the drivers are not all young. You know, you have, like, pensioners, people who got out, who couldn't find a job, but then they have this that they can use for an income.
Yeah, that's why we want to tie back to what we started off the show with, right? Joseph Stiglitz, and he says the various forms of taxation, you see, to roll out all these, you know, capital gains tax, property tax, the government has to have a proper mechanism in order for these taxes to be rolled out. That's one. Number two, Dr. Mahathir, Tun Mahathir has said earlier this morning that he's going to be very, you know, private, enterprise friendly. But we've seen, at least in the first few months, he was very hawkish towards private sector, those that originate from China. We've seen him being very hawkish and making very bullish statements about Forest City in Johor Bahru with Country Garden. He has made, you know, a lot of cancellations with all these,
these are the big ticket, projects,
these
right?
signal the kind of behavior that the government can do to the private sector. And if you're a private player and you're investing a lot of money, perhaps even your own money, into all these ventures, anywhere from being, you know, from being a small startup to these mega billion ringgit projects, if the government, at the whim of a fickle mind, can just cancel projects
I also wanted to add another thing. I mean, look, if we talk about GLCs, right, the thing about GLCs is, when you have government involved in just so many parts of the economy, I mean, Professor Terence Gomez's study shows, like, what, 68,000 subsidiaries, you know, under GLCs, state level, ministry level, federal level, and this is crowding out the private sector. Why is it that the government has, you know, businesses like hotels and golf courses and fast food restaurants? You know, these things should be run by the people, by the private sector. So, you know, if we can rationalize the role of GLCs and get government out of, you know, some of these industries, then that can really open up the job for government out of our business.
This is, of course, the mantra of the Institute of, you know, of for democracy rather, and economic affairs that Ira comes from. We're going to be back with more, I think, very stimulating discussion about what are the priorities of the current government. Stay tuned to Let's Talk, only on Astro One. Welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me in the studio, Ira Azhari. She's with the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs. And also Ibrahim Sani, of course, a regular feature on Astro One. You know him very well, as
soon,
I do.
Soon you too.
Yeah, will be a regular feature. It's going to take a bit of time. It's only day two. Thank you very much. Lim Guan Eng, of course, our newly minted minister, newly minted finance minister, has come out to say that in the medium term, his government will remain strictly on the path of fiscal consolidation. Now, these are big words for many of us. I mean, what exactly does it mean for the man on the street when the government of the day says they're committed to fiscal, consolidation, they're committed to, you know, fiscal discipline? Sounds very good, and I'm sure analysts and you know, rating agencies love this stuff. But does it mean cost to the man on the street? Something has got to give when the government makes such a commitment, Ira.
Well, I think the ongoing commentary since the government got into power was just, you know, how much they're really out of money. But I think some stuff that Tun Mahathir said in his speech was interesting, because then suddenly he said that we should have new taxes, right? Because the government doesn't have enough money, which is weird because, you know, the huge government promise was to abolish GST, which was, you know, a very efficient way of collecting government revenue. But I mean, you know, just going beyond the GST, I mean, I'm very doubtful at how, you know, how realistic it is to introduce a new tax at this stage.
I think he said as much. I mean, he said
that
will be pushback from the general population.
Yeah.
But governments need money to run.
The other thing he said was also that government should sell assets. Sell some of their assets, and he specifically said that, you know, selling land, he doesn't mean selling land to foreigners, but actually selling land to Malaysians, and I think that's a good idea, really. I mean, you know, that's also what Ideas proposes when it comes to GLCs, let's rethink the idea of privatization. Right? Privatization has gotten such a bad name from Thatcher and Reagan and all those kind of stuff. But you know, why can't we return some of these GLCs to the people? I mean, you know, that will raise revenue for the government and also you know, get the Malaysians owning some of these assets.
Right, but because you know the story of privatization in Malaysia has also been the story that comes close to the story of cronyism, right?
Yes.
So when you privatize, especially state assets, it's always going to somebody. Now, who is that favored someone that's going to get it?
And we know the constant criticism against Tun Mahathir's critiques have always been about his orbit towards his own cronies. Now, of course, this was, you know, plaguing his previous administration. Under the new administration, we're looking at a very different Tun Mahathir. We're looking at a very conciliatory Tun Mahathir, Tun Mahathir that is willing to work with Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim, with PKR, and many of the other colleagues of his in Pakatan Harapan. So I'm not too pessimistic in that sense. What I am pessimistic, or at least wary about, is this whole new taxes rollout. Mm. Ever since, you know, the Sheriff of Nottingham Forest tried to do this whole new taxes thing, Of course, it's a kid's story, right? You got Robin Hood stealing from the rich. But the moral of the story is new taxes will never go down well with people.
Okay. It's political suicide.
It is.
Okay,
so we need more money. But then, we'll roll up new taxes.
Okay, but let's be kind of fair to the government, right? The government has to pay for the kinds of things that we want.
Okay.
We have to come to terms with the fact that many things are subsidized. The other day, I got my gas, my tanki gas for my cooking, and then I said, you know, has the prices gone up? And the man says, no, he's very astute. He says, well, actually, no, your gas is subsidized.
Yeah.
You know, it really ought to be 50 ringgit, and you know, you're paying 30.
Okay, let's talk about the numbers here, right? The bottom line. The bottom line is that there was a tax holiday, and data has shown that retail spending has gone up. Yeah. Anywhere from your tong gas that you speak of to cars and other purchases, including house purchasing. And that has boosted up retail spending. Again, if you fall back to the conversation that I had with the three economists, they say that during that tax holiday, a lot of retail spending has been going up. Mm. But does this mean that once the SST is being rolled out, we don't have the data yet because data is very retrospective. We need to wait until 1 or 2 months or at least until December to figure out the data. Will these retail spending go down? And if it does go down, what does that mean to people like you and me? The question still remains. Retail spending is going to be one of the biggest chunk of the Malaysian economy. Mm. If people don't go out and spend, there will be stagnation in the Malaysian economy. And that's where the problem lies. You can only spend retail if there's little taxes or low taxes. And I'm very strong proponent towards lesser tax than more tax.
Okay. Ira, I want you to take up the question of data that Ibrahim just mentioned, because it seems that, you know, part of the problem with the former dispensation was a lack of evidence-based policy making.
Yeah.
How much, from your perspective, your institution, how much do you know about the facts on the ground? Is there enough going on in government where they have a methodology of securing information that actually would be a sound basis for policy formulation?
Yeah, I mean, even at Ideas, you know, one of the big hurdles that we always face is it's difficult to find data. So, you know, for example, we recently did a study on Chinese FDI into Malaysia, and part of why it was really, really difficult to do was because access to data was almost impossible. So,
is it access, or is the data available but not accessible, or is it a question of just no data has been collected in a way that, you know, can be used productively?
Yeah, I think that's it. Yes. So there is data, But, you know, how do we share this with the people? I mean, it's not, you know, I mean, there are international open data standards, you know, where that the government should adhere to, but then it's not there. So I think data, I mean, if you go to the Department of Statistics and Bank Negara, you know, they have all the numbers, you know, with, you know, fiscal stuff and economic policies, but really, how do people on the ground get to use this data in research, in policy making? CSOs need to use it. I think that still remains a challenge. Yeah.
The headline CPI did fall very ever so slightly at -0.1% month on month from August to November. That's something that we need to look at.
Yeah, but is that sufficient? Data point, is that inadequate to actually construct a new kind of economic formula?
No, of course not. And this is where you know, we have old actors like Najib saying that the government has lost billions of ringgit in terms of revenue because of the newly acted policies, including the cancellation of GST or many others. So it gives ammunition towards the previous administration to level these kind of accusations towards the current government.
But okay, so this is where, you know, Malaysians might find it very difficult to sift fact from fiction, and also from the deeply politicized discourse around policy and initiatives. Put aside the former Prime Minister, how do we make sense of some of these things? I mean, your institution itself, what do you have to do at IDEAS to come up with a clear picture of what's happening on the ground?
Yeah, I think the role of an organisation like IDEAS really is to, you know, because IDEAS has, we have our worldview, right? We have our principles, you know, we are a limited government, free market-oriented think tank. And I think it's important that we project this view because, you know, our politics currently in Malaysia is not ideology, it is not dominated by ideology. It's a kind of a pragmatic, you know, outlook that the government always has ever since, you know, Mahathir's time, the first Mahathir's time and until now. So I think it's important for CSOs like IDEAS to say, okay, look, what really is the issue here? Like when we look at GLCs, we say the bigger debate is actually what's the government's role in the economy? You know, so if we look at issues that way, then it gets rid of this partisan, like, you know,
I'm getting the sense that you are also one of the many institutions in the country that is trying to suss for details from the government in terms of their policy.
You see,
this is the thing that I'm talking about. We're looking for details. We got the rhetoric, done and dusted. We got the headline numbers, you know, 2.8% fiscal data. Yeah. We got that. 1 trillion debt, we got that. But organizations across the country and beyond, foreign investors and IDEAS for that matter, are looking for concrete kind of plans. Now the question is, are we giving the government enough platform for them to present concrete, stable plans? And I think we have. My argument is that a lot of platforms like KMF, like New Dawn, and many other conferences like it. I mean, I was just attending GIF, the Global Islamic Finance Forum, a few weeks back. These are platforms that the government could have expound on and explain in detail their plans. And yet, no detailed plans are made available for organizations like IDEAS and many others.
Right. Okay, we'll have to hold that thought. We're going to be back with a look at the Minister of Economic Affairs and his ideas about the middle income trap that we find ourselves in. Stay tuned to Let's Talk. Welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin. We're continuing our discussion about the economy. It's a complex matter in the modern world and with no easy solutions. Do you want it state-directed? You know, to what extent can you leave things up to the market? Whose interests are going to dominate if that is the case? Let's turn our attention to a headlined notion, the middle income trap. Does anybody here have a definition of what the middle income trap is? What I understand, and I'm going to jump in there with a definition.
Person to person, I suppose.
Well, I mean, no, this is not, you know, this is not a middle age crisis that, you know, we have as persons. This is about the the trajectory of an economy, right? And so, when Azmin Ali, the minister for Economic Affairs, spoke at the Khazana Megatrends Conference, he mentioned this and he said, and he outlined several things that he thinks needs to be done for us to go beyond the middle income. But a lot of these things, you know, beg the question of, do we have the capacity? Of course, we want to sell, you know, global standard type goods and products, you know, services and products to the world. We also want to embrace, you know, Industry 4.0. We want to do many things, but do we have the capacity?
That's, you see, the hint is in the name, KMF, right? Megatrends. And from year in, year out, even since Tan Sri Azwan Mokhtar's time, from before, they have been outlining some key industries that the government can invest in. They have outlined key industries that the private sector should invest in. The only difference here is that no participant, no notable participant from KMF 17, 16, 15, and so on, are in KMF 18. Everybody's new. We've got new board of directors. Nine board of directors from before are no longer around. They're enjoying retirement somewhere. We've got five new faces, two of which are in the cabinet, Tun Mahathir and Azmin. They're trying to wrap their heads around. And of course, we've had we are embracing a new MD of Khazana, which is the former CEO of EPF, DSRR, right? Shahrizal Rizwan. The question is, they know what needs to be done. It's not new to them. The question is, can they roll it out? Again, we're lacking details, at least in the public domain. I'm pretty sure a lot of details were discussed in the private space of the annals of Mandarin Oriental, where the conferences are taking place. But you know, the public needs more. We can't wait for the budget.
Okay, so let's. So, Ira, what's your take on the middle income trap?
Look, you mentioned an important point, which is, do we actually have the capacity and the talent to break out of this middle income trap, or, you know, to go into this IR 4.0 economy, right? But I think, you know, when you ask this question, it's actually just so much more fundamental than that. I mean, what actually makes, you know, people in a country high talent? It's really a good education system, right? So is our education system really preparing our young people to, you know, go into this economy, to get out of this middle income trap? And
I got to pause you right there. The Minister of Education also is aware that education is at the bedrock of everything.
Yeah.
But again, we're lacking details in terms of the education.
Right? Everybody can say that. I mean, we all say the right things when it comes to the education system. But altering the terms of it is always the tricky thing, right? Because it involves changing, maybe undermining vested interests, right? And it might not be people with lots of money. It just might be people who are hanging on to a job and to ways of doing things that they've always done.
Yeah, which goes back to really just, you know, how do you get the people who actually operate these policies, you know, to really realize that these things need to change.
One thing I want to note is that all these, ministers of ours, including the Prime Minister himself, and Datuk Sri Anwar Ibrahim, when he goes to these foreign places, he does meet them. They do meet the Malaysian diaspora. They do meet the Malaysian talents overseas. In fact, one of them even said that if you can't come back home to Malaysia, at least invest in Malaysia, right? Invest in Malaysian equities, invest in Malaysian properties, largely because the currency is low. Whatever they're earning there, they can get a lot more if they invest in Malaysia. Look, the Malaysian diaspora is there to stay. If they want to come back, they come back. But we can't rely on that talent anymore. Yeah. But whatever that we're building
here... Build it here.
Okay,
yeah.
So... Okay.
And we have such a high graduate unemployment rate, right?
I mean,
we have a low unemployment rate, but graduate unemployment rate is like over like 20% now.
Yeah, right. Because...
And so this is... university is not responding to the marketplace, largely, right? A mismatch of skills with what actually... what demand there is out there. So... where is the political will to change things? Because some things have to give when you make these changes.
I got the answer for that. Some things have to give. It means less academic qualification, more vocational training. Yeah. Where's the political will? TVET. That's the big issue.
And Nurul Izzah is heading that.
Nurul Izzah is heading
that. Together with the MP for Pematang Power.
Yes,
right?
Yes. And Nurul Izzah doesn't have an official government title, but that job of
it's
being the official coordinator of a TVET coordinator is a big deal. She has coordinated two things under this new role, from the Minister of Human Affairs,
Human Resources, sorry, Kula Segaran, and the Minister of Education, Mazli Malik. She's working very closely with this. Something was got to give. We got to give the blunt truth to parents. Yeah. If your child doesn't cut it for academic qualifications,
then
there's nothing wrong. In fact, the prospects are much higher if you pursue vocational education and training.
Right, so there's a cultural and social shift that has to go along, right? Mm. So vocational education has been stigmatized as being something lesser than a degree.
Yeah.
But there's so many degree mills out there that in fact they have, you know, watered down or devalued the meaning of a degree.
Yeah.
The degree is no longer... And, you know, there's something I think in the Malaysian psyche, and correct me if you think I'm wrong about this, is that we loathe elitism. We loathe the idea that, you know, that some people get and, you know, and it should be a minority that get access to certain, you know, say, for instance, university education, right?
Yeah.
We want it to be broad.
We want everyone to get that.
But
that's really a mindset shift.
Right? I mean, if everybody has a degree, then honestly, who's
going to
be...
means nothing.
So, the data is very stark. Yeah. We have 3% unemployment rate in Malaysia. That number has not budged for the past decade. Yeah. Of that 3%, close to half are youth unemployment, right? And within that youth unemployment, you're right, it's actually more than 20%, a lot more than 20%. The question is, are there systems in place put by the government to get these youth to work? There is. Yeah. SLIM, for instance, Scheme Latihan Satu Malaysia, it's unpopular right now to use the term Satu Malaysia, One Malaysia, whatever, right? But SLIM is still around. Corporates are hiring these youth individuals, but it's not enough.
Yeah.
So the mechanism is there, not enough. It's not meeting the demand, and there is a huge, huge demand for vocational experts, anywhere from, you know, from mechanics to lighting
welders,
guys, to welders, deep sea welders.
Yeah.
There's a lot of demand for that, but we have to have that shift of change, and this is where, you know, the dichotomy between the Minister of Finance and the Minister of Economic Affairs, you know, at first glance, you're like, oh, is this a political kind of split? But it becomes a little bit clearer. The administration of Tun Mahathir, the 7th Prime Minister, is very clear. He wants to make sure that while we manage the fiscal prudency under one ministry, we have to look at long-term financial planning for the economic purposes.
Right. We'll
and that's where we need to have two ministers.
Right. We'll come back to Dr. Mahathir's statements, especially I think he's in several fora now defending affirmative action, warning against the consequence of ignoring social equality, social justice in the pursuit of growth. We're going to be back with that part of the story very soon. Stay tuned to Let's Talk. Welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutan, because this is a show that brings you the most important conversations of the day. We've been talking about the economy and whether the government has the capacity to solve many of the problems that we all at least feel intuitively that's happening in our country. We have with me Ira Azhari. She's with the Institute, for Democracy and Economic Affairs. And all along with me, Ibrahim Sani, who, of course, is a familiar face on Astro Awani. We want to talk about the elephant in the room. Affirmative action has been defended on the basis, very interestingly, by the Prime Minister as something necessary for social and political stability. He says class divisions are bad enough. If you overlay class divisions with ethnic ones, or use the word identity politics, then you have an explosive mix. Were you persuaded, Ira, by his arguments that affirmative action or any kind of... And the continuance of that kind of thinking in terms of government policy is necessary for political stability?
Okay. So the thing about affirmative action in Malaysia is, it's race-based affirmative action, right? So with the, you know, when the NEP came in, you know, it was supposed to end in 1991, but then, you know, many of the policies continued. And I think this issue of political stability, I mean, I would make the argument that, you know, if the government actually looked at, you know, the issue of how do we uplift all members of society that are left behind, that are suffering in poverty or cannot get access to jobs or, you know, get access to the economic pie, I think that would actually make, you know, make the government more popular, right? I mean, why can't we look at it as how do we uplift all members of society rather than, okay, this group of people need help. Right?
Okay, but yeah. This is a nuance to what is being argued for. And I think, you know, Anwar Ibrahim also touched on the question of affirmative action. What did you note in his speech?
So Anwar Ibrahim, okay, so he actually starts off the whole theme of affirmative action under inequality. And he actually quoted John Rawls and his notion of justice and fairness. And, you know, he said that we cannot ignore those who are treated unfairly and everyone must be given equal opportunities, right? And, you know, he said this interesting thing, which was growth with equity. Right, I'm not too sure what that means. He didn't elaborate, but you know, and he emphasized that we are not against meritocracy and all these things. But you know, again, what does these things actually mean? Is the government going to now go ahead use Anwar's speech as, you know, this stepping stone or this pedestal to say, okay, look, we are going to take a long, hard look at affirmative action policies in this country and see whether they have actually served its purpose or not.
Okay, yeah, you know, because we've had several years of this fight against the establishment, starting with the Reformasi movement. Mm. And you remember the articulation of this idea that we had to replace Ketuanan Melayu with Ketuanan Rakyat. Remember, that was a very important kind of statement that was made. But do you think politicians in Malaysia are still anxious that if they don't say at some point, remember, just last night, Anwar Ibrahim said, there is no place for racial politics in a multiracial Malaysia. He then went on to say, well, but we must not forget that, and we haven't forgotten, to deal with the specific problems of each of these communities, I guess, framed in ethnic terms. Is there kind of a double speech? I mean, do you see a contradiction in this?
If it quacks like a dog, and if it, you know, you're gonna
get if it quacks, it's a duck.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah. So. You know, the fact that politicians always lace their conversations with affirmative action notions,
always.
But they preface it with all these disclaimers, it still means that they are very much into it.
Yeah.
And you could see from, you know, from the hard stance that Tun Mahathir says during Hard Talk and many other, you know, fora that you know, affirmative action is here to stay.
Yeah.
We see, you know, Anwar Ibrahim saying the same thing. Folks in UMNO are saying the same thing. And who can blame them? Because their party is prefaced on that affirmative action policy. It looks like the politicians are still talking about affirmative action. We're going to have to expect affirmative action is here to stay.
Right. Okay, Ira, if politicians in some ways are a symptom or a reflection of larger society, is the conversation necessary, not so much with politicians, but actually on the ground? And what does organizations like yours, have you in some ways crystallized or, you know, kind of incited a conversation about equality and social justice in Malaysia that's different from what we've experienced the last 60 years?
Yeah, I think in terms of affirmative action, we have looked at it seriously when we were doing our study on GLCs, you know, because a lot of these GLICs and also GLCs serve a social purpose, which is, you know, the social mobility of the Malays, right? And you know, so we have gone on to say that, look, you know, are these affirmative action policies that's been carried out through these GLCs to help the Malays, have they actually worked over the years, right? And I mean, of course, there has been, you know, there is that the NEP generation, you know, which is largely like my parents' generation, where, you know, these policies have done well to uplift them into, you know, social mobility and a good education and stuff. But, you know, but how far should that continue? And until now, do we still need these policies? And
and
the thing is, you know, at IDEAS, we have always said that, you know, all sections of society, regardless of race or religion, you know, deserve that opportunity. But then the question then comes in, like, who gives that opportunity, right? Is it the government? Is it supposed to be private sector led? So,
I'm giving Ira the last word. We've run out of time, okay. Unfortunately. It's been a really interesting discussion. Remember, you can always join me every night at 10 p.m. on Let's Talk. Share your ideas with me. You can tweet me at Sharad Kutin. Are you on Twitter, Ira?
Yes. But
you don't want to share it.
No.
Okay, she doesn't want to share it with you. Never mind this conversation.
Follow us on Ideas. We have Ideas has Twitter.
Okay, Ideas has Twitter. You can always find that online now. Thank you so much to my guest, Ira Azhari, with
you.
The Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs, and of course, Ibrahim Sani, also from Astro Awani. Remember, tomorrow at 10 p.m., join me then. I'm Sharad Kutan, and this has been Let's Talk, only on Astro Awani.